Chapter 7. Stay Out of Malibu, Deadbeat. Dealing with Fascists and Hospitalizations. As I've mentioned before, one of the nearly 30 jobs I've had over the years was being a professional mediator. I worked for the City of Dayton Mediation Center, helping people resolve disputes of all kinds. One time, I even helped two mediators try and work things out. It was interesting. But during the course of that job, my boss wanted me to work with the local police on a project, so I signed up for a ride-along to get a better sense of how mediation might be useful. It didn't take too much convincing on my end that an unarmed communications expert could do more to defuse a situation than a cop. I think the police should be abolished anyways, but that's for another book. During one of the ride-alongs, I had an exchange that I'll never forget. "What's the most common complaint you guys have to respond to?" I asked. "Oh, definitely mental health crises," he explained without hesitating. Now, if that's not a reason to divert some funding from the police to social workers in and of itself, I don't know what is. But unfortunately, most places haven't done that just yet. So the reality is that you're likely to run into a fucking fascist at some point if you're not careful, particularly if you're bipolar, and especially if you're bipolar 1. So how does one stay out of Malibu, Deadbeat? Preparation is pretty important, if you ask my opinion, which I guess you did since you're reading this. Before I go too far into the prep side, however, let me just give you an idea of how bad it can get. I checked myself into the hospital during my last full-blown mania episode because I was so delusional that I thought my boss was a spy and that I had blown her cover, and the only way to help her out was by checking myself into the hospital and telling them I was going to kill myself. Now, was I seriously thinking of killing myself? No, that usually happens more when I'm depressed. But I did know that it would get me admitted. And I don't think my ex was capable of handling me by that point anyways. Staying up all night smoking Churchill-length cigars in the living room with a friend until 5 a.m. one time was enough for her. So I checked myself in. Now I was completely gone at this point. I remember watching Ellen in the room they put me in and somehow convincing myself that the holding cell, for lack of a better term, that I was in was actually her green room and that I was going to be called on as a guest at any moment and given a medal by the president for my great work uncovering an international sex trafficking ring. But at one point, I was getting a little restless and wanted to get on stage sooner rather than later. So I started banging on the doors. Two of the hospital police showed up and, in my mind, I merely asked them if they wanted to do some jiu-jitsu. I'm a blue belt, and they looked like they enjoyed a good roll, so I was just looking for a way to pass the time. And no, I'm really not making that up. I wasn't actually trying to take out the cops. I truly was just looking for something to do. They saw it differently, however, and that's how I got put on my second 72-hour hold. In some municipalities, they call this being pink-slipped. So named for the pink slip they used to use when you'd get admitted. A pink slip isn't quite like getting arrested, but for all intents and purposes, you are essentially locked up against your will. You're at the mercy of the doctors or the legal system to let you out at that point, and it's a terrifying thing. Some people use the legal system to get free, while other people learn to play nice with the doctors and get let out. I've tried both, and I can tell you without a doubt, the second option is superior. Yes, you're locked up, but it's much nicer than jail. I've been there too. It's much more dreary. So I want to share some tips in case it ever happens to you. For starters, write your name on your underwear. Yes, people do steal things, and they're not big on locked doors in the psych ward, so labeling your stuff is very helpful in case it happens and you know who took it, which is the case more often than you might expect. Don't worry, though, about your socks. You'll get cool new grippy ones anyways. And that leads me to my second piece of advice about your stay at the Grippy Socks Hotel. Just look at it like a vacation. Except unlike the Hotel California, it doesn't have to be the case that once you check in, you can never leave. And thank fuck for that, because I hate the fucking Eagles, man. But I mean, it's probably going to cost you as much as a month-long European trip, so you might as well live it up, right? Just imagine, your food is catered, you get a decent bed, 24/7 round-the-clock care, usually there are games and TV, although a curfew might be enforced, and oftentimes there are fun workshops you can attend. I've done some of my best artwork while in the psych ward, in my humble opinion. My favorite is when we do music classes, though. Those rock. Hands down, though, the best part is having no cell phone. You didn't think they'd let you keep that, did you? But look at it as a blessing. Where else have you truly not had to worry about responding to texts and emails for 72 hours? I've never even had that much freedom on a vacation. It's truly the last place you can check into and check out and not worry about anyone but yourself. Honestly, you should be paying them for holding you. Oh wait, never mind. You are. Make sure you have insurance, by the way, or it may result in crippling debt. More on that in another chapter, though. That being said, staying out of the psych ward is always a much better alternative. Looking at it positively is good, sure, but better never to have to be locked up at all. But how does one stay out of the psych ward during a manic episode, you ask? It's not easy, but there are a lot of things you can do to improve the odds that you'll never be inside of one. All of them have in common, however, that you really need to institute those safeguards before you're too manic to think straight. Otherwise, you're not going to make the right decisions. One thing I'd recommend is coming up with a literal contract and signing it. I have one with my fiancé, and it includes a list of symptoms and a number of bullet points representing agreements I've made that I will do in the event that those symptoms begin to rear their ugly heads. They include things like being in bed by 1 a.m. and sleeping for at least 6 hours per night, taking my prescribed meds, including ones I only take when the mania gets really bad, making no investment decisions, and not spending over $30 per day when I'm manic without approval. Oh, and this is huge, but I agree to have my phone taken away when things get too bad. You might think this is dumb, but part of the problem with mania is that you begin to see connections between everything, and texting with people and having internet access that allows you to research those 7 new business ideas you just came up with can be a huge accelerant for your racing thoughts. So things like reading or watching TV are good, as it's less about screen time and more about not allowing your brain to run off on its own and get you into trouble. Add in the fact that bipolar people are stereotypically considered, even if for good reason, to be more likely to cheat on their partners, and it really just gives everyone more peace of mind. You can find a reproduction of our contract in the appendix that you can make your own, and I highly suggest you do so. Which brings me to another point, and that is that putting these safeguards in place isn't just for you. It's for your friends and family as well. Your behavior can become truly traumatizing for others if you're not managing your care, so it's crucial to create expectations about what will happen when you're manic and clearly outlining at what point you'll go to the doctor and/or hospital. For me, it's experiencing hallucinations and delusions. That step is crucial for maintaining a semblance of control over the situation for you and your partners, friends, and/or family members. I promise you'll thank me later, and they'll thank you for doing it. Of course, putting a contract in place is one thing. Following it is another. This is why it's important to be accurate about the symptoms you experience and recognize that they can and do change over time and even vary from one episode to another. So look at it more as a living document and less as an inalterable constitution with inalienable rights. Even more important, however, is the attitude you have about it. After my first hospitalization, I denied that I was bipolar. After my second one, however, I accepted it and put these safeguards in place. I haven't been back since, knock on wood, but I have definitely been manic since then. Thankfully, I'm no longer afraid of going to the psych ward if I have to. I just recognize that it's a very expensive stay, and I should do everything I can to avoid it, but I should go if I need to be there. But having that mindset of no longer being afraid of going and recognizing that it's temporary if I do has made me free to be much more honest with myself and others about whether it's time to go or not. Part of not being afraid, though, is also finding a place you want to be taken. My first stay was awful in part because of the staff at that facility. The staff at the second one I went to wasn't nearly as bad. For example, they don't let you have caffeine, and after 2 days of being there, I recognized I was being served decaf the whole time and had a crushing headache. The staff took pity on me and gave me some real coffee. Now, that's where I'll go anytime I need to be hospitalized. If nothing else, I'm a loyal customer, okay? Now, there are places you can go to look up reviews of psych wards, such as Facebook and Reddit, before you have to go. So, I'd recommend doing a little Googling on the ones in your area while your mood is stable, so that when the time comes, you'll at least know which ones to avoid. Better yet, get into a bipolar support group and ask others where the best places are to visit. You'll be glad you did, as our mental health care system is less of a system and more of a patchwork quilt of care sewn together by people of widely varying skill levels. The point being, of course, that not all psych wards are created equally, nor are psychiatrists for that matter. They should honestly be doing everything they can to keep you out of there, so if yours isn't, then find a new one that you're comfortable with. It will save you a lot of time, heartache, and money. And speaking of money, and planning ahead, let's talk about finances next.